This is the IBJ podcast for the week of October 21st, 2019. I'm Leslie Weidenbender. Welcome to the podcast. I'm in this week for Mason King, who is on a well-deserved vacation. Today, we are going to talk about one of my favorite topics, food, or more specifically, downtown Indianapolis restaurants. According to Downtown Indy Inc., the area is home to some 300 restaurants. Some are tiny, like Supremacy, one of my favorites just off the circle on East Market Street. Others are chains, like Chipotle and Weber Grill. And still others are locally owned treasures. Think St. Elmo Steakhouse, Lockmiller's, Patachou, and Shapiro's. But it seems lately that downtown has had some fairly high-profile restaurant closures. In the past 2 years or so, Palomino, Shula's, the Hard Rock Cafe, Scotty's Brewhouse, and Granite City have all shut down. So today, IBJ real estate reporter Mickey Shuey is in the podcast studio to chat about the downtown restaurant scene. Welcome to the podcast, Mickey.
Thanks for having me, Leslie.
So, Mickey, you wrote a story for this week's IBJ about the restaurant scene. And so I'm curious, is there a reason to be concerned that downtown restaurants are in trouble?
So it's a bit of a complicated answer because as patrons to these restaurants, especially the ones that have closed, you may think so. But if you ask brokers who are in the industry, especially those who deal specifically with downtown restaurants, there really isn't a concern. It's just the market is essentially correcting itself at this point. These high-profile restaurants just happen to be the ones that are on their way out.
So when you say a correcting, what do you mean by that?
These chains, a lot of them at least, were in financial struggles. Scotty's Brewhouse, of course, they filed for bankruptcy last year. And then you have places like Palomino and Granite City that are either in bankruptcy or have started bankruptcy proceedings. So a lot of that just boils down to financial struggles. The brokers that I've talked with have indicated that some of these restaurants may have had financial struggles because they weren't willing to change with the times. They stuck with their normal activities and weren't willing to evolve their concepts. They weren't willing to kind of see what new things they could do to bring in more visitors and more patrons.
Are brokers optimistic that they can get some new restaurants into some of these high-profile spots? I'm thinking of the Scotty's Brewhouse location, which is pretty close to Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and Palomino, which is right there, a block from the convention center. Are they feeling pretty good about that?
They really are. They've indicated that while these restaurants close, they're still prime locations. They're going to bring in a lot of people if they get filled. Same with Red the Steakhouse, which is on the market right now for, I believe it's $25 per square foot. That's pretty good retail space downtown with that price tag. So the brokers and the industry as a whole are confident. There's been a lot of talks about groups that might want to come in. A lot of national chains are looking here. Brokers, of course, wouldn't give me insight on who those were, but they are very optimistic that this is just a short-term correction, if you will.
A couple of these locations that are now empty are actually in or a part of Circle Center Mall, but at the same time, Circle Center Mall has actually been going through kind of a redevelopment where they've been creating more restaurant space. Just in the past few years, Yard House, Burger Study, Nada, Punch Bowl Social, those have all opened in those spaces. What is the mall trying to achieve by having some of these restaurants along its perimeter?
Really, they're trying to get a slice of the pie. This all has been in development for several years now, but kind of started back when Indy got the Super Bowl and they were trying to look for new ways to implement different ideas and bring new concepts to the city as fans were going to flock to the city. Through that, they started carving out some space that was being used for storage or first floor retail and turning that into restaurant space. And they've done a lot in the past few years, especially with the entrances. They've revamped the entrances. Think of the one at Illinois and Washington Streets where Granite City is. That space is very attractive right now for a lot of restaurant chains because...
Yeah, well, when the mall first opened, you had to go inside the mall to get to the restaurant space that is now Granite City, but they added that entrance.
They did, and then they also revamped the area where the elevator is on the inside. So if you do happen to be inside the mall, it's going to be a lot cleaner of an entrance for that space. But they really emphasized street access for a lot of their restaurants that didn't have it before.
Yeah, for so long you could walk by the Circle Center Mall and not even realize that what was going on in that building because there were really so few access points. Now there are just really a ton of restaurants located along the perimeter. Do you expect that there could be even more in the future?
I do, because Circle Center has come out and said that they are looking for ways to redevelop the Carson space, which has been vacant for over a year now. Notably, Target decided that it's not going into that space. So the mall is looking for ways to reactivate that space. And they're considering some new first floor retail, as well as maybe some office uses like they're doing on the third floor. And then certainly some restaurant space as well. They're not willing to say yet exactly what that's going to look like or what the timetable is on that, but that's really what they're looking toward right now.
It seems like, I mean, that Indianapolis is just truly packed downtown with restaurants. We said 300 restaurants, and it's really not a huge downtown. How big a player is the convention business in ensuring that Indianapolis has a lot of restaurants?
The industry is absolutely crucial for downtown restaurants. When visitors come here, they look to places like St. Elmo and Harry and Izzy's, of course, both owned by the same company. But they really look to the national brands to drive their eating habits for their convention visits. And the convention industry has really grown around that and grown up bringing more restaurants to town. For example, in 2010, while there were 22 million people visiting Indianapolis, and about 650,000 of those were for conventions, that's quite a bit lower than what it is today. Nearly 900,000 people are coming for conventions, and 28 million people are coming to Indy on an annual basis. So the convention industry has really driven the restaurant business to an extent.
Yeah, so it sounds like the two things are really kind of tied together. The restaurants depend on the traffic from the conventions, and the convention center and convention organizers, I assume, really rely on the city to have enough restaurants to handle it. I mean, nobody wants to come to a convention and not be able to find a place to eat.
Exactly. They're very codependent upon one another because, as you said, people want to be able to go places to eat, but the convention industry also needs to continue bringing people here so that way the businesses for these restaurants continue.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the fun stuff. You identified in the story several restaurants that will actually be opening soon or have just recently opened. Let's run down the list of some of the things that people can look forward to. Name a couple of the restaurants that are new.
Well, you have Tea Swirl Crepe, which is going in along East Washington Street. That's a unique concept from New York. It's kind of a different take on crepes than what many people are accustomed to. It's going to be kind of a sweet and savory mix versus the dessert type food that a lot of people here are used to. And recently, Pier 48 opened at the dual-branded Hyatt across from Bankers Life Fieldhouse. That's kind of a more casual approach to seafood, where you can kind of get your hands dirty while you're eating.
Okay, but what do you mean by that? Get your hands dirty while you're eating?
So a lot of these downtown seafood places, it's very white tablecloth. While there are some white tablecloths in this new restaurant, it's very hands-on. You're cracking open shrimp and
crab legs,
things like that. So it's a bit more of a laid back, fun environment than what you might get at wonderful restaurants like Ocean Air or the like.
You know, that restaurant, I haven't been to Pier 48 yet, but it's got a really great location there, right by the field house, right along Georgia Street, and then they've got some outdoor dining. It seems like that's probably going to be a popular one, I'm guessing.
Yes. It's been open for about a month, and I was talking with the owner earlier this week, Fred Knipscher, and he said that they've had about 300 people on average each night, which is pretty good for a downtown restaurant so early on in its existence. So I expect that it will do fairly well. Interested to see how the renovations to Bankers Life Fieldhouse play out and affect that, if at all. But it seems to be off on the right foot.
Another big, highly anticipated restaurant opening downtown, I think, is District Tap. Of course, people are familiar with the location that's up on 86th Street, and this was their first downtown location. Where is that restaurant? Where did that open?
That opened at the old Broken English Taco Pub, which closed abruptly at the end of last year, earlier this year, depending on who you ask. But that is a prime location in downtown restaurants, especially with a hotel planned right next door at 121 South Meridian Street. So you can expect that a lot of people who go to Georgia Street and up and down Meridian Street will be checking that out, especially those who are familiar with the Northside location.
Okay, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, and we'll be right back with the IBJ podcast. The IBJ podcast is brought to you by Krieg DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com. Okay, we're back with Mickey Shuey, the IBJ real estate reporter, who has written a story for this week's IBJ about the restaurant scene downtown. Now, I think there are several fast casual restaurants coming downtown. As a person who works downtown, I always appreciate a lot of those kinds of restaurants rather than having to spend a ton of money at a sit-down place for lunch. What are some of those fast casual options that are coming?
So one of those is the Pomodoro, which is Italian for tomato, and essentially it's going to be a fast casual Italian restaurant. It's going where Nook used to be, the paleo Whole 30 and a keto-friendly restaurant that was next to the Hampton Inn. That is going to feature essentially a Panera-style ordering approach where you go to a centralized counter and you place your order, and then you get a number or your name is called to get your order. They'll still serve drinks, including beer, wine, and I believe other alcohol through servers who come to your table. But it's definitely a different approach to Italian food. It's also a more moderately priced type of food.
I want to go back before we talk about some of the other fast casual places that are coming. You actually talked to the owner of Pomodoro and previously Nook for your story. What did he say about the downtown restaurant market and what makes it tick?
So Johnny Visalo, one of the minority owners of Pomodoro, he's had a few concepts come here. As you mentioned, Nook, and before that, there was a steakhouse that was at that location.
Moe's, a place for steaks.
Yes, yes. And he said that downtown is essentially like every other downtown in that if you have business, great, you're going to do well. But if you're not managing, if you're not changing your approach to dining, then you're probably not going to do well, just as we've seen with places like Palomino, Granite City. So he kind of takes a unique approach in that he's open to trying new things. He's always looking for new opportunities to change things up.
Now, I thought it was interesting what he said about why he thought Nook didn't work.
Nook struggled, he said, because essentially the food was too customized for patrons because all the dishes were for special dietary needs. Well, it was a great concept. It just didn't work in where it was located near Bankers Life Fieldhouse and all the customers who would come through there before games or after games even. Looking for essentially a quick meal.
So that makes sense why then in switching to the Pomodoro concept, they're looking at something that is in that fast casual category, something where you go to the counter and order.
Correct. That's the approach that they're hoping will pay off for them.
So there are a couple of Asian fast casual restaurants coming as well. I think they're on Washington Street. Is that right?
That's correct. Wei Ramen and Go Stir Fry Indie. There's not a lot known about those right now. We do know that the ramen place is actually managed by the same gentleman who manages the boiling, which we'll get to here in a bit. But they're really unique concepts for downtown in that there's not really a stir-fry place, at least not super close to the circle. And there's also, to my knowledge, not a ramen place downtown.
Yeah, there are a couple Chinese places, but not something that specializes in ramen specifically.
Right, right. And I'm sure my wife will look forward to going to the ramen restaurant.
Both of those Asian places are going in near where IBJ used to be located before we moved to the circle, right across the street there from Morton's at the corner of Washington and Pennsylvania. So I think that those will be welcome additions to that part of downtown.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned something about the boiling. There's a little bit of movement among some restaurants going on right now, which I think is the result of the King Cole building being redeveloped into a hotel. First, remind us what that project is.
The King Cole building is indeed being turned into a hotel, a Motto, a Hilton brand. There's not a lot of information about that right now. The developers are still working through what they want to do with that. But the plan is to essentially redevelop pretty much the whole building into a hotel, maybe some private residences, and a restaurant on the in the basement. The Qdoba is going to stay there, at least for now. They are part of the current plans for that building. But the other tenants in there, including the art gallery upstairs, a beauty salon, I believe, is in there as well. And then the Boiling and Jimmy John's are both leaving the building or have left the building as part of this redevelopment.
So where's Jimmy John's headed?
Jimmy John's is headed to the 100 block of North Pennsylvania Street. It's where King David Dogs was located at one point.
One of the most devastating downtown restaurant closures, in my opinion, was King David Dogs. So I'm glad to see something going in the space. I really wish it was back to being a King David Dogs.
So by the time this airs, I believe that Jimmy John's will be closed at Wood North Meridian, but they'll temporarily be operating that location out of another location along Illinois Street, which means I'll be getting a lot of delivery. But in December, they're expected to open their new location on North Pennsylvania Street.
Now the Boiling, where is it headed?
So the Boiling is headed right around the corner, actually, to the old Charblue restaurant space. It's expected to take at least part of the first floor. It's not clear what's going to happen with the rest of the building because the owners of Charblue at one point said that they wanted to turn part of that into more of an event space. We haven't heard back from them about what their plans are for that building at this point, but the Boiling is going into that building.
Charblue is another of the restaurants that Indianapolis lost in the last year or so. It was a restaurant co-owned by Gary Brackett. That's actually been a little bit of a tough spot for restaurants. There have been several in there, but it actually gives the Boiling a much more visible location.
It's right off Washington Street, right near the Circle, just as the old location was. But that old location was a little tough to get into. So this location, it seems, is a welcome change for the Boiling.
Okay, Mickey, so as we wrap this up, I want you to tell me what your favorite restaurants are downtown.
So one of the first restaurants that I went to after I started working here was Pearl Street Pizzeria.
Oh, it's one of my favorites.
Yes, I think it has the best mac and cheese in town. And if you want to challenge that, please do, because I'm always looking for good mac and cheese. Aside from that, I actually just went to Burger Study for the first time this past week, and it was fantastic. I definitely expect to go back.
I'm a big fan of Burger Study as well. It is absolutely delicious. My recommendation is always Lock Miller's, which is a big hangout on Washington Street over by the State House, right behind the Westin Hotel. And that is where lots of State House folks hang out. And in my former life, I had an office in that building kind of above Lock Miller, so I spent a lot of time there. I'm also a big fan of Coaches. Lots of the IBJ folks, when we had our building over on Washington Street, we spent a lot of time at the Coaches Bar, which is there on Pennsylvania, also pretty close to the Field House. So that gets a big crowd whenever there's a concert or a Pacers game. So those are some of my favorites.
Yeah. Needless to say, we still make our way back to Coaches every once in a while.
Absolutely. Well, Mickey, thanks so much for running down the restaurants with us. We hope to have you back on the podcast soon.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks again to Mickey Shuey for joining us on the podcast. You can read his story in this week's issue of IBJ and at IBJ.com. I want to point out a few other stories in this week's issue. Reporter Sam Quinn explores a coming dip in the number of high school graduates, the result of a slowdown in birth rates during and after the Great Recession that could leave colleges scrambling. Experts say the changes could lead some smaller schools to close and force others to recruit students from non-traditional areas, including adults. Greg Andrews has a story about, well, Story, Indiana, and the transfer of the town's ownership from a father who recently died to a son who left his job in Seattle to take over the bed and breakfast and gourmet restaurant there. And Sam Stahl profiles Justin Vining, an artist who is as obsessed with data and business analytics as he is with painting. Vining and his brother, who is an attorney, have purchased a building on East 10th Street that they'll use for a law office and for Justin's studio and gallery space. You can catch all of these stories in the issue of IBJ delivered to your home or office or at IBJ.com. And if you're not having IBJ delivered, just go to IBJ.com and hit the subscribe button. Thanks for listening to the IBJ podcast. Mason King will be back next week.